Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Casting the Net. Today is a continuation from the last few weeks where they discuss Lent and, in particular, the teachings of Father Dubé. They talk today about the acceptance of self at a particular level, the three phases to conversion that Father Dubé talks about, how most human miseries arise from a lack of conversion, the idea that sin obscures sight. And Rick has a great explanation in this episode where he says, we tend to see the world as we want it to be versus seeing it for how it actually is. How sometimes we have a tendency to not see reality. And towards the end of today's episode, they give five reasons to consider going the distance this Lent. Sort of a recap from the episode. So we hope you enjoy today's show, and we will see you again next week.
Hi, I'm Father Dave Nuss, together with Father of Four, Rick Lingvay. Welcome to Casting the Net. We are in search for catching the faith. Friends, we're back for another episode of Casting the Net, Father Dave and Rick, and we are together to be able to invite you into a conversation that we have been enjoying throughout this season of Lent, a conversation fueled in large part by a contemporary work by Thomas Dubé, Father Thomas Dubé, entitled Deep Conversion, Deep Prayer. And Rick, first I want to ask you, as I usually do, how you doing?
I'm good. Don't I look good?
You look
radiant.
Well, those aren't the words that the Holy Spirit is putting in my mind.
I know. I look tired and unkempt.
Here's the good news. What? Improvement is possible.
Oh, that's right. That's the big takeaway from Father Dubé. Yeah.
Getting better.
That's right.
That's what we're working on.
Unfortunately, as Father Dubé points out throughout this book, it's far more prominent to jump from grave sins to, you know, sort of a spiritual mediocrity than it is to move from spiritual mediocrity to gospel love and holiness.
Yeah, the heights of holiness. And while you may be saying that tongue in cheek a little bit, we really want to press on that point today.
No, I mean he's in my experience
spot on. Yeah, correct.
It's absolutely the case. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's worth mining a little bit.
Absolutely, positively, that he asserts that several times in the work. So the big conversion from abject serious sin to the renunciation of serious sin and the pursuance of virtue is far more common than those who are living a life of grace, striving to become even more configured to Christ.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's sort of depressing. We're sort of jumping around here. So don't try to follow too closely at home. Right now we're roughly in chapter 6.
If you're driving, for gosh sakes, pay attention to the road.
That's right. Okay. Don't try to text us. Right. Objections or complaints.
Two
or
hands on the wheel,
remarks.
10 and yeah. 2.
But I don't know if this bummed you out, but it certainly did me. He wants to know why. Like why do people settle for this mediocrity? And he quotes favorably, as he agrees with her, Saint Teresa of Avila. You know, it can only be that most people are okay with it. Most people are content, happy, perhaps even sadly. That's depressing for obvious reasons.
Yeah,
but I mean, you know, that lots of people settle for mediocrity in lots of facets of life. So I guess that's also not unexpected.
Yeah. There's much to be said about this today. I mean, the great malaise in the church is of our own doing, and settling in for expectations that are base and low. Mm-hmm. And at times in my own life, giving excuse to not elevate and grow for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. Some of that might be comparative to others, and I'm better than some.
Yeah.
Other just might be an acceptance of, well, it could be worse.
Which, I'm not as bad as that guy.
And not as bad as that guy, but could be
worse.
Which
maybe it's true, but that's not good enough.
It's not.
It's not about comparing yourself to others.
Right. Yeah. I mean, how is it that people can go to church, and whether you're Catholic, Protestant, or Orthodox, worship God regularly at church and really be no different intellectually, morally, or spiritually mm-hmm. as a result of that? You know, we've settled into – it's yeah. a cruise control that gets set.
Yeah.
And an acceptance of self at a particular level and not permitting really God to be breaking in to daily living.
Yeah, yeah. So earlier in the book, Father Dubé points out that there's really three phases to conversion. There is eradicating mortal grave sin.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's got to go. There's the jump to working on eradicating venial sins. It's harder, as he points out repeatedly throughout the book, including that quotation from Bernard of Clairvaux that he yeah. kicks the book off with.
Yeah.
And then there are two negatives in this process, and then there's a positive, growing in the love of God.
Yeah.
You know, and that has no end point in this life. There's no ceiling to it. So comparing yourself to others is basically pointless because there's no finish line in this life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he posed, well, when he points out that you know, most people seem content with spiritual mediocrity, most people seem content with staying at the you know, the venial sin phase of the process. He gives us he gives the reader some reasons to seek deep conversion. Like if you know, it's almost as if he's saying, okay, if you're happy here, I'll give you some better reasons to push deeper.
Yeah,
and some of those reasons are actually interesting to ponder. One we already talked about, the fact that most human miseries arise from a lack of conversion. Mm. Like most human miseries arise from my own egotistical self-centeredness.
Yeah.
Again, for reasons that we detailed last yes. episode. Like if yes. if the world revolves around me, and you're not me, I'm going to butt heads with you.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just sort of a logical conflict there.
It's my world. Thank you for living in it.
That's right. Drop by anytime. I guess we actually touched on number two as well. Becoming more holy or growing, you know, closer to being a saint redounds or ripples outward toward others and influences them. And we talked about the positive influence that you'll have yeah. on your family.
And so many others.
And others. Yeah, sure. Sure. The third one is really interesting to me, and this is something that I'm counting on you to have some comments on. This comes straight from the mouth of one of your heroes, Hans Urs yeah. von Balthasar. The third point that Father Dubé makes is that sin obscures sight,
yeah.
which is a notion that is prominent throughout the Catholic intellectual tradition, but Hans Urs von Balthasar makes a lot of hay with that point.
He really does. So for Father von Balthasar, who died in 1988, Swiss theologian, Swiss by nature, though he gets kind of categorized with German mm-hmm. theologians of his day and age. For von Balthasar, the leading way that God reveals himself to humanity is through the transcendental of beauty. Mm-hmm. Beauty is something that is seen or something that is heard. It's something that is experienced. It's something that stirs the imagination, that fires passion. It moves us to be curious and adventurous and exploring to discover more. And that particular quote that he embeds into his book from Father von Balthasar about sin obscuring sight. Let me frame it this way. You know, no one wakes up in the morning and says, how can I be remarkably mediocre again today? You know, nobody does that.
No.
The biggest laggard doesn't think that way. Might think immediately about himself or herself, but isn't pressing to become more mediocre, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the possibilities for it being different become difficult to see.
Yeah.
And we settle into thinking and maybe even saying and resigning ourselves, albeit with discouragement, I'm kind of stuck. I guess this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
I just can't be any different.
Mm.
And now the desire to even invite God into life to change it wanes.
Yeah.
And it's a really sad, and I would say pathetic, and pathetic here, pathos, suffering.
Right.
It's a place of suffering. Yeah. If I'm not happy, or if I'm miserable, agitated, defeated, it's a suffering place to be. And there are so many today that find themselves in the throes of this kind of turmoil.
Yeah, yeah. Perhaps stated a little bit differently.
Please.
To be egotistical, or to be wrapped up in my own egoism, is to see the world the way I want it to be, mm. and not necessarily the way it actually is, you know, to not see reality.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we talk a lot about truth. I mean, you spoke of the transcendentals. That's kind of a classical idea from ancient and medieval philosophy, and the Christian tradition adopted it. The transcendentals are basically just different ways of looking at reality.
Yes.
You know, seeing reality in terms of what's beautiful, seeing reality in terms of what's true, seeing reality in terms of what's good, like kind of looking at it from different perspectives, or like with a different emphasis on something.
Yeah. Yeah. Points of view.
Yeah. I forgot where I was going to go with that. Oh yeah. So, and so, you know, to see something, to see reality is to behold something that's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Balthasar talks about how truth is symphonic.
Yes.
You know, and what he means by that is when you're a symphony and you're playing music that the master wrote, and you play it the way the master intended it, yeah. it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah. Spectacular.
Well, yeah. It's going to be riveting, captivating.
Yeah. Rousing.
But when we all kind of go off and do our own thing and play things the way we want it to be played, or play things the way we imagine it should be, it's going to sound chaotic and probably ugly. It's not going to be real.
Yeah.
It's not going to be what the maestro intended.
Yeah. In fact, it'll be disfigurement of that which was, you know, originally beautiful.
Yeah. So you can kind of see how truth, beauty, and goodness all kind of come together into that one single reality with Balthasar's example of truth being symphonic.
But yeah. I'm going to try to do this in real time, so I haven't thought this out. But you quoted, as I remember, Coach Bob Knight.
I did. Like, yeah.
Trying to increase our listeners in the great state of Indiana.
So all you Hoosiers out there.
Well, another coach comes to my mind in regards to von Balthasar's insight that Dubé quotes, sin obscures sight. So sin makes it difficult for me to see reality as it really is. Reality that's charged with possibilities and differences that are able to be attained with God's help, that it doesn't have to continue to be the way that it is. And there was another coach in a different sport. His name was Vince Lombardi.
Who's that? I'm just kidding.
Ouch.
I know.
Ouch. If I had feelings, it would have hurt, but it didn't hurt. And he coined the phrase, which would actually be a book that would eventually be published, Run to Daylight. And as ridiculous as this might seem, plays were scripted. And a running back would stubbornly insist on running into the hole that was scripted for the play. I'm supposed to go off the right tackle.
Even if there's no hole there.
Even if there's no hole there. There's the back of a lineman, or there's a defensive lineman. That there was this rigidity.
Yeah.
And a lack of permission in the sport and in that era to even consider possibilities. You have to stubbornly do it the way that it was scripted to be done, despite the fact that it's going to be an abject disaster. Mm. And it was taught to his Green Bay Packer team and to those who carried the ball that you are to run to daylight. So while you might have to, you're supposed to go off the right side of the guard, maybe it's the tackle. You got to go a little bit wider to do that. And what sin does, right, it makes us so stubborn in a willful way that I just simply deny possibilities that it can – it can ever be different, that it can ever be better, that it can ever be joyful, that it can ever be fulfilling. Yeah. And I'm stuck and mired. And what the mature Christian and the genuine follower of Christ discovers is being able to see more clearly.
Yeah.
And I might even say that it's God's glory that is recognized, which is supercharged with possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a really great incentive to seek deep conversion. You'll see. I mean, who doesn't want that?
Yeah.
Right. And you'll be joyful about it too. That's, yeah. I mean, that's another incentive that Father Dubé lists. Right. So, I mean, there's three or four of his better ones. And there's a final one as well that I thought was, it's really, really fundamental, but also important and interesting. He makes the point, and we all learn this, like if you've studied the catechism at any length, sure, or in any amount, or gone to a CCD class, we are preparing in this life for what we're going to enter into in the next, right? And so in a real way, our actions are sort of eternalized. Like we don't just live our life here now and then kind of show up and say, all right, I'm ready yeah. for the party. Let's
yeah,
begin.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we're already getting a foretaste of it now.
Yeah.
By becoming the sorts of people we will be in the life to come. Dante, you know, great, great poet from the Catholic tradition, 13th century, wrote, you know, the Divine Comedy. It's sort of a tour that he offers the reader through heaven, purgatory, and hell. Not in that order.
Right. It's the opposite it's
order.
Other
way, but you understand.
The way up, not the way down.
That's right. I like to start on an optimistic note, you know. But Dante's Inferno, which is the tour through hell, does a really good job of illustrating this. And his point in writing it this way isn't that he thinks this is exactly what hell is going to be like. He's trying to teach the reader the point that we eternalize the actions we perform.
Yeah.
Right. So like the people who die, you know, in a suffering from the grave sins of lust or having committed the grave sins of lust are one of the first levels of hell, because as the serious sins go, Dante doesn't think it's the worst. They get blown around for eternity in a tornado, because that's they allowed their passions to blow them around in life.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to regulate them and discipline them.
Yes.
They just kind of,
allowed,
you know, their lustful feelings to take them whatever direction they wanted.
Yeah.
The deepest circle, right? I mean, we think the deepest circle of hell, or sort of in popular imagination, it's going to be this flaming inferno. Dante says, no, it's a frozen lake.
Yeah.
It's reserved for those people who had such lack of charity that they betrayed their closest friends.
Yeah.
And it's the three greatest traitors in history, thinks Dante, just frozen in a lake being slowly gnawed on by Satan.
Yeah.
Because you know, they're lacking the warmth of charity in their hearts.
Yeah.
You know, they did, that's what they experienced in life. That's what those were the acts they committed in life. And so that's what they're experiencing in eternity.
Mm.
Right. So it's a really interesting theological and I think an important spiritual lesson that we're in the game right now. Like the game is going on right now. We're practicing for eternity.
Yeah.
We've been on a great figures of sports run here recently. I remember Muhammad Ali talking about how you know, the fight is won long before the fight is he actually engages in the fight, you know, before he quote unquote dances beneath the lights. He wins or loses the fight either in the gym training or on the road, you know, putting in his steps, as we would call them now, doing the road work of jogging, you know, training.
Yeah.
Like that's when the fight is won or lost.
Yeah.
And I think there's a really valuable spiritual insight there too.
Yeah. For us to take to heart and to take to heart in this season of Lent, friends, as we want to continue to be better. With God's grace and God's help and God's power and God's assistance, we want to break free from whatever it is that's obscuring us from seeing reality as it is, or launching more generously and faithfully into possibilities of God's own glorious designs. So with the time that remains in this Lenten season, to finish strong, and to really avail ourselves of the opportunities that God places before us. You want to do a quick recap of those five?
Most human miseries arise from a lack of conversion. So if you convert, there'll just, you know, logically be fewer miseries in life. The conflict will be removed. Becoming holy, you become a good influence to others, right? In your family, the people you encounter on a day-to-day basis. Since sin obscures sight, we'll see better. We'll see reality as it is, not the way we wish it would be. We'll be joyful about that because, you know, that's just a byproduct of seeing things. We're joyful. And then we're practicing, you know, to push deeper into conversion is to practice for what we're going to receive in the life to come.
Eternalizing now, yeah. Eternity breaking in, eternity shaping us right now. So five different reasons that Father Dubé gives to us to consider going the distance this Lent and really availing ourselves of the opportunity that Lent truly is to become better, to be more joyful, deepening love of God and love of neighbor. I'm Father Dave, he's Rick, and we're really glad you hung out with us again. We're casting the net. Friends, he's Rick, and I'm Father Dave, a dad and a priest, together trying to become better fathers by catching Christian faith. Thanks for joining us for our conversation, and we hope that you'll connect with us next week for Casting the Net.